Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
Good afternoon. Welcome in. We have a lot going on today, and we are not going to waste much time. Let's talk a little football before we get to the hoops, and there were plenty of hoop action last night to comment on, but let's start with some quarterback situations. How about that? Anybody see this coming? How long has he been waiting? Carson Beck, according to reports, he is going to be the man. And some people have been wondering what took so long, but that fellow named Stetson Bennett got in the way. I think Carson Beck is going to be the guy. Now the big question is, if Beck is the guy at Georgia, what does that mean for the Crimson Tide? A lot of people keep saying it's Jalen Milroe. We saw him, remember, in the Arkansas game in mop-up, and he also started against A&M in a game that went down to the wire. Reports out of Tuscaloosa seem to indicate it could be Ty Simpson. Remember, he was the five-star last year who played sparingly behind Bryce and Milroe. We saw this the other day on national TV. Once again, Dawn Staley chewing up and spitting out Gino Auryemma. And now, apparently, Gino had a couple of things to say on his interview with the media afterwards. Dawn went back after him last night. And you know what? I would say to Gino, get out of her way. You're the old man in the sea, and she is... She is the new queen of college basketball. Let's take a listen.
I just don't like the narrative every time that we're successful that we're called something other than players who are locked in, that plays hellified defense, that gives it up for the greater good of the game. That they play it the right way, they approach it the right way, whether they win, whether they lose. We don't denounce anybody's play. We are always uplifting the game of women's basketball. Now, when we were getting our heads beat in by UConn for all those years, I said nothing. And I say nothing before and after the game that we just won is they are the standard. Okay, they're a standard on the court. They're not the standard off the court because you take your hits. You take your hits just like everybody else. We play in the SEC. And that's how we play. And we're not going to change it.
You know, it's really good to hear somebody talk back to the GOAT. And Gino has been the GOAT for really ever since Pat Summitt left the game. But what Dawn said there was correct. She did it with dignity. And I'll translate what she's really saying. This is my opinion, not hers. Gino, you're old, you're washed up, and I am now the queen of college basketball. Get out of the way, old man. What about, well, I think I spoke too soon. I meant to say Jim Boeheim is the old man that needs to get out of the way. I mean, is this guy a loser or what? Have you heard about what he's done? He went after everyone. He basically accused three ACC schools of buying players. This is from the coach at Syracuse. Carmelo Anthony, hello, pick up on line one. We'll talk to Pat Forty about this later on. But have you seen this list here by Bill Conley? A&M leads the way on who brings the most production back. Now, some of this has to do with, you know, what you had and what you lost. But A&M's way at the top. Missouri, Auburn looking good. Would you loan me the Hubble telescope? I'm trying to find Alabama on this list. Where are they? Dead last. Now, that's good and bad news. That means Alabama had a great team last year. The bad news is they're all gone. Longhorns doing well. We know they got Arch. They got other players. I mean, they had a big-time recruiting year. Now, we don't know when they're coming into the SEC. That's TBD. But they are coming back, and Blake Topmeyer with the story on that and many others. Blake from the USA Today Network. Blake, always great to have you on. Thanks so much. Let's start with Texas. Seems like they're changing the narrative after a forever of disappointments. Good afternoon, and tell us all about it.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. I do think Texas is building momentum in that program. And I know it's easy to get the laughs and the guffaws in, and Texas is back has almost become, it's become sarcasm, right? It used to be something you'd say after a big win for Texas prematurely, and now it's something you say after Texas loses to Kansas. But jokes aside, I think you can see Texas is building something there. I mean, they just signed a recruiting class that was ranked as high as number 3 nationally in some services. They have Arch Manning, but I mean, they have more than that. They also signed the number 1 running back in this class in Cedric Baxter out of the state of Florida. One thing that really impressed me with Texas this past year was it looked like it was a more physical team, especially defensively. If you look what Texas did on defense, that's the best their defense has played since the 2009 season in which they lost to Alabama in the national championship. Texas has had very good athletes in this past decade plus of kind of wandering through the desert, but they haven't always been the most physical team. I thought that looked like a more physical program last year, and they still, you know, according to the latest musings, have a couple years here between their entry into the SEC. I think SEC fans want to believe that Texas is going to come into this conference and get popped in the mouth, but if we look back on things historically, it was a different SEC East at that time, but Missouri was winning the East in year 2 in the SEC. Texas A&M, in its arrival to the SEC, won 11 games. Texas A&M has been better in the SEC than they were in the Big 12. I think it's a myth that a team enters the SEC and is all of a sudden going to become a doormat and it's going to be too big for them. I think Texas is really gearing up for this admission, and I think some people in the SEC better be on notice here with the way Steve Sarkisian's recruiting.
Blake, let me ask you about when we're going to see them. That story broke the other day, and I still really haven't heard much about it. And really, it's had somewhat of a muted reaction. I think most of us expected to see OU in Texas in 24. Can you add anything to the confusing narrative around their entrance into the SEC?
Well, I just think the narrative gets confused when people sometimes want to reduce this to as simple as, well, the SEC wants them in now. Texas and Oklahoma want to be in now. And I think to a certain extent, the Big 12 may be okay with that divorce speeding up. But there's also media rights partners in this deal, too. And I think that's when we just look at the easy narrative, that's the part that's left out, right? It's like, well, Texas and Oklahoma want to be in. The SEC want them to be in. So what's the problem here? Well, they have a contract binding them to the Big 12 and to their media rights deal for the next 2 seasons. And until all parties can come on to an agreement there that makes sense for all involved, they're going to remain in the Big 12. And I just think, you know, that's the part of this tale that often gets left out is, well, if the SEC wants them in and Texas and Oklahoma want in, why isn't this a done deal? Well, because it's not entirely up to the SEC and to Texas and Oklahoma.
At this point, Blake, is there a best guess? I know what everyone seemed to say the other day, that it's probably not going to happen, but I tend to believe that there is a lot of leverage and negotiating going on, and it's hard to imagine, you know, how the Big 12 really gains. They get a couple of good TV games, but they also get a rather uncomfortable situation. Which way do you think it ends up?
Yeah, I know there's these self-imposed deadlines, but doesn't that kind of remind you to the 12-team playoff expansion, right? Like, how many times didn't the decision makers there blow past their self-established deadlines and say, like, well, if we're going to make this happen by 2024, it has to be done by such and such date. And then the deadline would come and go, and you read stories of saying, okay, well, it's not going to happen by 2024 now. And then, lo and behold, it comes together kind of at the so-called last minute. So, you know, I mean, we can hear the talk of deadlines, but I still think there's probably time to get it done. I mean, at some point, yeah, you have to move on from the idea of this happening by 2024. But I think the pandemic season, Paul, showed us a lot of things. And one of the things that it showed us was schedules can be scrapped and rearranged and opponents can be canceled at very short notice. I mean, if we look back on that season, you had conferences playing expanded conference schedules. They tore up the old schedules. They rolled out new ones. They canceled non-conference opponents. I really think that season showed us that if there's a will to make something happen schedule-wise, you don't need all that much time to do it. I mean, I think, you know, once the calendar rolls into 2024, if there's no agreement for Texas and Oklahoma to be competing in the league that upcoming season, I think at that point you're very likely past the deadline. But I still think there's time to get something done here this year that would allow them to come into the league as soon as 24.
Talking to Blake Topmeyer, Blake, before you go, we had a headline up, came from an ESPN analytics story the other day that A&M returning the most production, misleading, of course, considering they didn't lose much. Alabama did. But there seems to be this nagging question that's, I think, going to follow all of us until we get to media days in July. And that's really, you know, what's up with the West? Presumably it's Alabama. But you hear A&M conversation now. Obviously, the LSU conversation has been out there. I think we've even talked to you about that. Help us better understand, what do you think this looks like as we start to look ahead to the next football season?
If you could put out of your mind that Texas A&M went 5-7 this year and woefully failed to meet expectations, if you could put all that out of your mind and just look at things through a lens of 2023, I think there are a lot of reasons to believe Texas A&M can be pretty good this year. Now, what does pretty good look like? Does that mean winning the West? No, I don't think so. Does that mean going 10-2? Probably not. But I think Texas A&M can be one of the better teams in that division. I think it's a team that could win 8-9 games. You have to put 2022 out of your mind, though, right? If you let that start influencing your thinking, you think, well, Texas A&M was overrated this past year. They're going to be overrated again. They're often overrated, right? Part of the problem, though, they never should have been rated that high in the first place, Paul. Like, this was a team that was not well constructed to succeed last year. They were so reliant on youth, and part of that is the fault of Jimbo Fisher. He should have been more active in the transfer portal ahead of last season, adding some more veteran presence to that roster to where he wasn't so reliant on freshmen and sophomores. But they didn't have a quarterback last year. They were incredibly reliant on youth. Now, if you look at things now, we don't know for sure how good Connor Wigman is, but I think, you know, they have identified a quarterback. I do think Bobby Petrino has the potential to help them. And I do agree with the analysis, the projections you're talking about there that, you know, tries to put some sort of rating on the talent within the program. And I do think it's a talented roster. So I do think there's reason to believe that this will be a notably better, improved season for A&M. I think all the projections last year that had them being a fringe playoff contender, a top 10 team, I think those were far too early for the way that roster was constructed. I do think it's fair to say that A&M should be one of the better teams in the West this year, probably in that conversation right behind LSU and Alabama.
Exit question here. It's been hashed over for days, but we haven't heard from you on two new coordinators in Tuscaloosa. Your overall thoughts on how well Nick Saban did or didn't do with the two hires?
I think he did fine. I think these are the type of hires that a lot of SEC programs make. You know, Tommy Rees is that hire who has shown he can work with quarterbacks as a developer, young guy, 30 years old, willing to change jobs. I think that's the type of offensive coordinator hires a lot of programs are making. On the other end of the spectrum, Kevin Steele is the reliable face who's been there, done that, and we can call this an unimaginative hire, an uninspiring hire. And I think that would be accurate, but that doesn't mean it's not the right hire. I mean, I think Kevin Steele's done it really well at a lot of places inside the SEC. He's a solid recruiter. I think he's a solid defensive mind, and I think it's possible that Kevin Steele could be a bridge-the-gap scenario here for a couple seasons until maybe the future, whatever Nick Saban identifies that as, the future of his defensive coordinator spot kind of clarifies. We saw that be the case at the beginning of Kevin Steele's tenure, at the beginning of Nick Saban's tenure at Alabama. Kevin Steele was in that defensive coordinator role for Nick Saban when this whole thing started, and then was shifted to a different position within the program to make way for an up-and-coming young defensive assistant coach, Kirby Smart, who held that position, of course, for many years until he went to Georgia. And so I think it's possible that history could repeat itself here. I think the one thing we have to look at with these hires, anytime Nick Saban has positions come available, I think most of us expect on the front end he's going to prove to become some magician, some Svengali, and bend the sport in whatever way he wants and be able to hire whoever he wants. And so many times that proves untrue. Like, these are good jobs, but if you look at who Nick Saban has hired over the years, he's either hired guys who have recently been fired, who are down on their luck, the Lane Kiffins, the Steve Sarkisians, the Bill O'Briens of the world, notable names, but names who have been fired, or he's rolled the dice on someone like a Tommy Rees. So I think these hires kind of fit the playbook, particularly I think Tommy Rees fits a little bit of the playbook of Nick Saban in the past. He either has to hire a known name who's maybe down a little bit, or he has to take a chance on someone. The idea that Nick Saban can move mountains and hire whoever he wants, it's just not been true throughout his tenure there. He's made some really good hires. A lot of his coordinators have been really successful. They're blessed with great talent around them. But I think we are once again reminded that just because Saban has a coordinator position come open doesn't mean he can go out and pluck whatever hot name he wants out there. That's not historically been the case, and I don't think that was the case again here. That being said, I think these can both prove to be solid choices for Alabama.
Thank you very much, Blake. Great stuff. Blake Topmeyer describing Nick Saban's two decisions here as fine and solid.
Well, all right, then.
Sounds like what you say after a meal that you didn't like. We'll take a short break and come right back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You see a lot of other places, too.
Avrion Hertz, Sr., that is the father of Jalen. He'll join us next hour. And Pat Forty on why Jim Boeheim is the biggest clown in sports. Well, that's actually my thoughts. I don't know if Pat agrees with that. We'll take your phone calls beginning now at 855-242-7285. And Eddie is in Tuscaloosa.
Hey, Paul.
Eddie.
All last week or so back when they had such a great program on Coach Bryant, remembering his death, a question came up. Somebody called in and said that Coach Bryant had been in the Navy, which he had been, and some other man called in and said, well, what did he do in the Navy? And I'm here right now to tell you exactly what he did in the Navy, and it's exactly from his words.
Okay.
By the way, I called Paul Bryant Jr. this morning to see if it's okay to tell this.
Sure.
A number of years ago, they had an all-sports banquet at the Ferguson Center here at the university. And I was the MC, and I'm slaying them, as you can imagine.
Oh, man. Eddie, when Eddie's the MC, I've heard
it's
Eddie.
It's over.
I mean, it's not like me being the MC that will put you to sleep. I mean, Eddie's a Vegas show.
Yeah, Paul, you're the only MC I've ever seen that was booed.
That's true, by the way.
Well, anyway.
I got booed at my own wedding, Eddie.
At this particular banquet, I was the MC. My wife's with me. Coach Ms. Bryant was sitting right next to me, and Coach Bryant was on the other side of her. And he had a book out, and I'm sure he was right next to his nose in it. He wasn't paying much attention. But anyway, Mrs. Bryant and I got in a conversation, and she was asking me about me, and I told her what I did. I graduated Tuscaloosa High School, and I went in the Navy and so forth. And she said, well, what did you do in the Navy? And I told her that I was on a destroyer and I was a radio operator. And she said, well, Paul was in the Navy too. And she turned to Coach Bryant and said, Paul, what did you do in the Navy? Word for word, he said, whatever in the hell they told me to do.
That sounds like him, doesn't it?
Yeah. So that's been put to rest.
Oh, my goodness. That's great.
He did whatever they told him to do. But anyway, Paul, always a pleasure talking to you, buddy, and I enjoy it.
Eddie, no one I'd rather talk to. I mean, you bring such joy to the show, and I hope we can continue this. You be well. Take care of yourself.
Thank you a lot, Paul.
The great Eddie Conyers. And I've told the story, but trying to think now. It's been about Saban's second year at Alabama, or third year, I can't remember. My friend David Upton, who runs Crane Works, which used to sponsor Coach Dye on our program, was invited by the Bryant family, Mark Tyson and Paul Jr., to go out to Houston, where they had where they give out the Paul Bryant Coach of the Year Award. And Nick Saban was supposed to win. So he invited me. I said, I've never been. Sounds like a fun night. So you go out there, and they have a lot of really interesting people. And I'm like going, I asked the people at my table, because I said, who is this guy emceeing it? I mean, he was hilarious. And it was Eddie Conyers, the guy that was just on, who's now 95 years old. This was, he was a spry 80 at the time. And we met and afterwards, and have become friends ever since. And what he said a couple of weeks ago, you may have heard him. He Coach Bryant 60, 70 years ago, whenever it was, asked him to. He had some officiating in his background. He began to be the practice official every day, and he continues to do that even through now. We'll take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285, and we are back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome back. Richard is next, calling from Montgomery, Alabama. Hello, Richard. Hey, Richard.
I wanted to talk to you about yesterday you had suggested that perhaps Iman might need an exorcism.
Yes.
Well, I live in Montgomery. I contacted probably the only exorcist in Montgomery, just to get his feedback on it.
Yes.
And he said that for someone like you, Paul, or maybe Randy, he would do it pro bono for you two.
Okay.
But
nice of him.
But for Iman, he would probably have to spend quite a bit of time. But anyway, he said it really wasn't a Satanism possession. It was a Sabanism obsession.
Yes.
But anyway, I asked him, and I said, well, how long would this take? You know, and he was scared to estimate it. But I said, well, how much is it going to cost him? He says, well, I'd have to do it and see how much time and effort I spent. But he said, but there is one thing. If he doesn't pay me, I will have to repossess him. So, anyway.
Well, I appreciate that. That's I mentioned, again, I'm not the only thing I know about exorcism is from the movie 50 years ago. Something needs to happen. I think what we need to do is send him down to Coach Saban. I think Saban could Sabanize him very quickly. John is up next in Louisville.
Yeah, Iman's been in the news lately with you all. I think he needs to get a new picture, too. That portrait looks like a combination of the Shroud of Turin and Charlie Manson, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, is Charlie Manson still around, or is he dead?
I think he passed away.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm sorry.
That was a great opening monologue. I was going to use that Hubble telescope line, but I don't know if many people know what it is. So
yeah, that's probably inside astronomy for most people.
Yeah, or ages or so. And I agree with your summary. It's fine and solid on the two coordinator positions.
Yeah, I didn't think Blake was knocking himself out to praise Nick Saban there, did you?
No, and I think Matt will be disappointed that he said Texas A&M will be pretty good, maybe, kind of.
Well, what I don't understand about A&M, though, John, is a year ago we were all talking about this year being the year.
Yep.
And now we're back to, well, you know, maybe nine, maybe eight, maybe nine. That would be, I mean, all of a sudden we just keep lowering the standards for Jimbo Fisher.
To quote you, you said it can't be any worse. So I was going to talk about Jane Rashada, Ohio State recruiting, and Wrigley Field. Let's start with the Andy Staple interview, which I thought was fabulous. And it's just mind-boggling that a number 7 quarterback recruit who's 6'4", about 175 pounds, so he needs a year of putting on weight, is already scheduled to get $500,000 before he even steps on campus. Does that just blow your mind?
It would have a couple of years ago, but I mean, I feel like I've been in this MRI machine now for a year and a half, and I can't. If you've ever
it's
been
like
in
the
one,
Twilight Zone.
Yeah, you have no idea what's going on. But right now there are no surprises in college football.
Yeah. And there was a good article coming out of Ohio State recruiting where I believe the gentleman's name is Mark Pantone, the assistant AD of personnel development. And he was saying with the NIL that Ohio State is backing, and you know they've had a top five class forever.
Yeah.
They're backing away from top recruits when they push their NIL deal first. They're more worried about the team culture in the locker room. And I thought that was fascinating coming from him. And then you had their number one quarterback recruit out of Arizona decommitting. You have the number three quarterback recruit for 24, maybe backing out. He hasn't committed yet out of Michigan. So I think the top quarterbacks are going to be out there looking for the best deal.
Yeah, John, I think you're right. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Speaking of Matt, what do you got, Matt?
Hey, Burger, how you doing? You never answered my questions about the A&M creating the first African-American player. I just did more research into it, Paul. A&M had the first African-American players in 1963 before they signed the Civil Rights Movement by the president, Lyndon Johnson, in 64. The first African players in 1967, then in basketball in 1972. So what kind of impact do you think that had on the sport to get rid of these ignorant beliefs about it back then? And
well, I don't know, because I really am not familiar with the culture out there at the time, but that's earlier than...
Well, I mean, like, deep in the South, in particular, people didn't want it to happen. So what kind of impact teams like that had on it, that culture?
Well, Matt, I was trying to say that I don't know, because I'm not that familiar with... what I do know about that time, though... Gene Stallings was the coach in the 60s, in the mid-60s, and I remember being at a function, I think it was a 40th reunion of his team about 10 years ago, whenever it was, and I really, it was not discussed, and I don't remember, it was also right at the height of the Vietnam War, and that was really the problem at A&M. It had much more to do with losing players to the military than with integrating the football program, but I'll defer. I'll ask Coach Stallings the next time I speak to him, because he was the coach during that time. Dustin is up next. Hello, Dustin.
Hey, let me tell you something, there, Feinbaum. This show sucks. You know what I mean? This show is terrible. I haven't called in a few weeks because the show is so bad. And I heard you had these comedians on trying to be comedians. I got a joke for you. Ready for it, Feinbaum?
I am.
All right. Where's your career?
I can't find it.
Yeah, bend over and I'll show you. How you like that one? That's a real good joke. Hey, listen, I want to tell you, you got some bad callers, all right? I-Man, that RJ from Pell City, that kid that was just on, Matt from San Antonio. Hey, Matt, they don't call him Texas 8-4 for nothing, okay? But I'm going to tell you who the best caller is. The guy I like the most, do you know who it is?
No, Jim. Who's that?
It's that guy from Tulsa, Dustin. He's pretty smart. And I don't know for sure, but I imagine he's probably pretty handsome, too. He might have to send in a picture to prove it. But, yeah, I like that Dustin guy. Thanks.
Okay, Jim from Tuscaloosa calling in, and we appreciate that. We head to the break right now. More of your phone calls, more guests. The father of Jalen Hurts at the top of the hour.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We're back, and let's check in with Steve in College Station on this Wednesday afternoon. Steve, good afternoon. Will is up next. Hey, Will, good afternoon to you.
What up, Feinbaum? How you doing?
We are doing well. Thank you.
Hey, Will. I see where a lot of these Alabama fans are, as of this past couple of days, seem to be pretty content with Saban hiring Tommy Reese as the OC. I mean, it's kind of like an average hire, you know, a guy that's been at Notre Dame for a while, has got some good experience. But I think I have a much better option in mind. Could you take a guess to who you think I think that is?
Will, I'd really be hard-pressed to kind of think into your head.
Now, Fonbaum, I think that Brian Ferentz would have been the much better option for the offensive coordinator spot at Alabama. You want ground and pound, he's got it, man. He would come in and run that ball 3 yards in a cloud of dust.
Yeah, right now, though, Will, I think Ferentz is having enough trouble with his new contract working for his dad. I think he's much better working for his dad because nobody else in college football would employ him. Bobby is in Oxford. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
We're doing well, thank you.
Your staff. Look, what do you think my Rebels are going to do this year, this season? What are they looking like?
That's hard to say, considering what they have. Ole Miss is probably the most difficult team to ever predict because, you know, Lane Kiffin literally lives in the portal, so he's got so many new players. He's got really quite a – probably the most interesting thing is the quarterback competition. But right. I think they got to figure out a way to finish the season. Last year really was a big disappointment. One thing about Lane Kiffin – he usually wins the games he's supposed to, but he almost never, according to his past, wins the games of which he is an underdog in. And I think for him to be successful at Ole Miss, he's got to come up with that. And I thought the most, you know, there were so many disappointing games last year. The Alabama game, all they had to do was make a play and they would have won. The Arkansas game was a disaster. They threw the Mississippi State game away, the bowl game. So I'm really at a crossroads with trying to figure out Lane Kiffin. You help me. You're a fan.
Yeah,
what do you see?
My second question, and the screeners told me not to ask it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. But why do you think Ed Orgeron and Houston Nutt don't come up in a conversation for
– Okay. Well, first of all, I think Houston Nutt – is probably long past being a coach that people think about any longer. I think some of the off-the-field charades probably have hurt him as well. It's pretty well known that Houston Nutt and his legal team, you know, helped torpedo Hugh Freeze. Now, by the way, I'm not sure I blame him, but things like that ultimately do matter. Ed Orgeron, I think, will coach again. I think he'll be a head coach somewhere at a small school, somewhere in his footprint. I don't think he's done yet.
Okay. Well, I thought he would come up more in conversation about a defensive coordinator.
Well, first of all, he's sitting on the beach right now collecting $18 million. I ran into some people that saw him last year. And he seemed pretty content. Now, when he burns through the money, he'll be back in coaching. I think it's really that simple. What would you do if I gave you $17 million? Would you coach? Would you work tomorrow?
No.
Yeah, and that's Ed. I mean, Ed's
doing all right.
Ed's a free man in Paris, unfettered and alive. Stephen is up next in Georgia. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Fonbaum, what's going on?
Hey there.
Hey, I just thought I needed to call in, and I need to translate to your Bammers these Saban hires, all right? So
please.
Can I translate for you?
Go ahead.
All right, so, all right, Joe from Red Bay, this is for you to start out with, and it could be from Legend and Larry, but I don't think they've ever had a girlfriend, so I'll start with Joe. You know what, Joe, have you ever had a girlfriend that broke up with you? And she was smoking hot, dude. Like, she was hot. But she left you for greener pastures. And then you're setting up at night, you're struggling, and you get your black book out. And you're like, oh, she used to be good. You know what? I'll call her. She may have gained a little weight. She may not be as sexy as she used to be, but I'll call her. And sure as shit, she...
Had to do it. Billy is in California. Hey, Billy.
Hey, Paul. How are you, sir?
We are doing well. Thank you for calling.
Well, I'm sitting here in the beautiful Napa, California. It's a beautiful weather. And I wanted to talk about our favorite son, Brock Bowers.
Yes, sir.
Did you hear about the NIL deal that he, I guess there's two prongs approach with the NIL, where one, you get the money you can get from sponsors or whatever on your own, and the other one that's furnished by the school or the program, and he turned that down so that other players on the team could benefit from that, where he's...
Yeah, Billy, I thought that was magnanimous, and, Brock is in a position where, he is leaving a legacy behind. Hey, thank you for the call. The father of Jalen Hurts around the corner.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.